Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
When traversing the Pacific Ocean, wayfinders read the stars. They calculate the journey behind them and the uncertainty of what lies ahead. They may change direction, lean into unknown territory, or chart a new course. That was the career of Sir Thomas Davis, medical pioneer, ocean navigator, and NASA scientist. His sister always said that he'd like to have adventures overseas, even as a boy.
He decided he'd like to go and travel. So he got two coconuts, tied them together, put them under his arm, and away he went. Tom was floating out.
A young Tom Davis waded out into the ocean with only those coconuts for flotation in a doomed attempt at adventure. Mechatronic engineer Joanna Finch has heard that story before. As a Cook Islander, Tom's story inspired a career in the sciences.
His kind of personality started really from a young age, like the story of him, you know, tying coconuts to himself to get on the other side of the reef, only to steal the vaka of his rescuer the next day, pretty much sums him up, you know. He's a man on the mission.
Those missions would include sending monkeys into space.
At Cape Canaveral, two tiny astronauts, monkeys Abel and Baker, are readied for the first flight into outer space.
And a career in politics.
And so he formed the Democratic Party and they built all around him, ready for the 72 election.
Kia rana, I'm Koroe Hawkins. In this episode of Untold Pacific History Season 2, the extraordinary Sir Thomas Davis, Pātutirangi Ariki, affectionately known as Papa Tom. We heard from Te Pairu Wita. She's the younger half-sister of Tom Davis. In 2023, she turned 100 years old. She'll provide a few side notes to Tom's story.
We would have Tom come and have dinner with us. And away he'd talk. And the two of us are sitting there. Yeah, that's right. And when he goes, we look at each other and say, did you understand? No, neither of us could. But we let him talk. That's what he liked, to be listened to.
Tom Davis was born in 1917 in Rarotonga. He might have inherited his love of sailing from his grandfather, Captain Thomas Harries, who ran a schooner business in Rarotonga and Tahiti. He was well known for transporting copra, pearl shells and gem pearls across the Northern Cook Islands and the Tuamotu Islands. He became known as the Pearl King of the Pacific. Harries died in 1918 and had earned enough to give his family a good start in life financially. As a boy, Te Pairu says Tom was curious about the world around him. But his mum saw that he was destined for bigger things.
She said, be a doctor, and then you can do whatever you like after that. She just wanted him to come back here to serve the people.
And Tom Davis didn't need much convincing. He was 9 years old when he knew he wanted to study medicine. So his first steps towards becoming a doctor began a few years later, when at 13 years old he attended King's College in Auckland. After college, there was a fork in the road. One road led to Fiji. At the time, Pacific Island students who wanted to pursue a career in medicine were encouraged to attend the Central Medical School in Suva. It was considered a natural progression. But Tom Davis knew that after 3 years of study, he would qualify as an assistant medical practitioner, not a doctor. The other pathway led to Otago Medical School in Dunedin. But before we get to which path Davis took, there's a bit of context to the story. First, about how the health system worked in the Cook Islands. In 1900, the Cook Islands were annexed by the British Empire, and in 1915, the executive government of the Cook Islands was put under the authority of a resident commissioner appointed by the New Zealand government. The office assigned to look after the health of the Cook Islands was the Cook Islands Medical Department, run by the colonial administration. At the time, good health care was non-existent. Here's Howard Henry. He lives in Rarotonga and has written extensively about the history of the Cook Islands. Just a warning, this next bit was recorded on the beach in Rarotonga, so there's a bit of wind in the background.
The health system of the people of the Cook Islands was terrible. It was very, very poor. Outer Islands didn't have a doctor. He'd think he might have had a doctor. The rest of the island didn't have a doctor. They might have had a nurse who had very limited resources. The whole health system, well, it was very poor. The health of people was very poor. Elephantitis and all sorts of other diseases was paramount, was prominent.
So the Cook Islands health system desperately needed an overhaul with more doctors and nurses, and we've already mentioned the Central Medical School in Suva. But this school had a problematic attitude towards its students. The rule was that native students would wear a lava-lava or traditional clothing. Anything that was more European in style was not allowed. And it's not as if these students didn't know about European culture. Many had studied abroad at Te Aute Boys College, or like Tom Davis, at King's College. And a few of these students were sons of chiefs, so they had the means to a private education, and they were accustomed to wearing a suit and tie. Here's Dr. Dawn Ngatokorua, a former paediatrician who trained in Suva.
The mission was to train natives to be better natives, but not to be imitations of Europeans. So basically they created this school where they could send local people to train and come back and work in the medical field, but not to be as good as Europeans.
Tom later wrote in his autobiography that these policies were keeping the people down to make them feel inferior, and he was having none of it.
He didn't want to come back and be told by some overseas qualified doctor as to what to do. So then he bypassed that system by privately funding himself.
So, back to that fork in the road. After King's College, Tom Davis borrowed £50 from his mate's dad, Skip, and set off to Dunedin. Arriving in the mid-1930s in the middle of the Great Depression, Tom Davis's life in Otago was tough. He had some lousy landlords, but colourful flatmates. He got a bunch of odd jobs to pay the rent. He worked in ditches and shoveled manure at a fertiliser company. At one point, Tom got his taxi driver's licence and worked from 5pm to 3am and attended lectures at 9am. He learned to catch up on sleep pretty much anywhere he could. These side hustles were all in the name of getting him through medical school. It paid off. In 1945, he became the first Cook Islander to graduate from Otago Medical School. In the mid-1940s, Tom applied for a job as a medical officer at the Cook Islands Health Department, but he was turned down four times by the colonial administration. Ian Johnston asked him about it in a 1994 interview.
Well, why wouldn't they want you back? I mean, they must have been relatively short of doctors.
The government didn't think it was a good idea to have an educated Cook Island come back in an important role. I'm sorry, but that was the opinion at the time.
And possibly the reason for the attitude of the time was to avoid having an educated Cook Islander working in the Cook Islands, because they might point out uncomfortable truths about the inequalities of the local healthcare system. But as we said, Tom Davis had a steely determination. He applied again, and it turned out the fifth time was the charm. He got the job. Tom Davis was about to swap this Scottish-esque town of towers and cathedrals in Dunedin for the crystal-clear waters of home. With a new family in tow, his wife Lydia and son John, he was back in the islands to as much sailing, surfing and fishing as he wanted. And while that sounds picture perfect, the health system in the Cook Islands was anything but. In his autobiography, Island Boy, he wrote,
"From the outside, One could not see the hospital properly because it was surrounded by a veritable jungle. A beautiful jungle, but scarcely hygienic where one remembers that such a jungle harbours the mosquito vector for filariasis and dengue fever. It was not a good example for the populace.
And people suffered.
Nearly all the patients were elderly. In my experience of many things which scream of poor delivery of medical care, one is low daily bed rate and the other a high proportion of chronic elderly patients. If both occur at the same time, things are not what they should be.
And that was just what he could see in Rarotonga. Imagine what could have been happening in the 15 other outer islands. During the last 6 months of his tenure as medical health officer, around 1947-48, Tom Davis studied tropical medicine and hygiene at the University of Sydney. Here's Dr. Dawn Ngatukurua again.
And so that kind of paved the way for tropical medicine and science within the Cook Islands. Prior to that, the death rates, I mean, we're talking about leprosy, tuberculosis, Yaw's disease, filariasis, you know, and this caused a lot of deaths.
Tom was appalled at the condition inside the hospital, so hygiene and good sanitation was paramount. He got rid of the overgrown jungle, brought in more rubbish receptacles, and brought the state of the hospital up to scratch. In his first 3 years as the medical officer, Tom and his team put in measures that reduced or eradicated many of the tropical diseases. He was doing well in his job and clearly getting results. In 1948, Tom Davis was promoted to chief medical officer. He established midwifery and maternity services, a nursing school, and even a mosquito control program. But then during Christmas of 1950, Tom caught up with his former dean from Otago Medical School, Sir Charles Hercus. At the request of Davis, he had brought his students from Otago to the Cook Islands to work during the summer. As a mentor, Sir Charles told Tom that he'd done all he could in Rarotonga and it was time for a new challenge. Here's Te Pairu Wita.
Then he got a scholarship at Harvard University.
When word got around that Tom was off to the prestigious Ivy League University in the States, the resident commissioner, who in 1951 was William Tailby, wasn't exactly happy for him. Tom Davis had this to say in that 1994 interview.
And when I went to Harvard, the resident commissioner here, I'm sure maybe it didn't come from New Zealand, but he said, if you accept Harvard, you will never get a job back in a business.
Good heavens. Really, he wasn't proud of the achievement and the honour.
No. This was, I had done a terrible faux pas by accepting the invitation to Harvard.
Ah, yes, a case of that good old New Zealand tall poppy syndrome. In any case, Boston, Tom's first port of call, was a world away from balmy nights, palm trees and blue seas. He finished work in the Cook Islands in March 1952 and had to be in Boston by that September. And there was only one way he was getting there.
And he bought a schooner, went by schooner to Boston with his wife and two children under 10 years old.
Now you might be thinking, not everyone will buy a boat and try and sail it halfway around the world. Well, in Tom Davis's case, he was fascinated with ancient Polynesian seagoing. As a young boy, he would help his papa Manuela on board his 35-foot launch to tow lighters into the harbour. So when he decided to sail from Wellington to Boston in 1952, he was confident in his sailing skills. He bought a 44-foot yacht made from kauri and named it Miru, the name of a Polynesian goddess. Tom Davis was about to sail through the Pacific, the Caribbean and the Atlantic Oceans. In his book, Island Boy, he wrote,
"All we needed now was to get her victualled for the voyage, obtain the necessary charts and navigational instruments that I did not already have, install the radio equipment, which as a radio ham I did have, Check out the engine generator and other mechanical and electrical equipment. Ensure that all sails and running gear were in order with spares and extras on hand. Arrange the necessary papers. Find two crew. Obtain visas. Say goodbye to friends and relations. And set sail.
Tom Davis and his family sailed through Peru and the Panama Canal to the United States. They arrived there safely, but it took a bit longer than expected. He was 6 weeks late for his first class at the Harvard School of Public Health. Tom graduated from Harvard with a master's degree of public health. He got a job at Harvard College's Department of Nutrition, but later transferred to the Department of Physiology. In a few years, Tom Davis was cracking it in the world of academia. He earned international distinction as a research physiologist. In 1958, he was appointed the director of the Division of Environment Medicine for the U.S. Army at Fort Knox in Kentucky as the chief research physician. Then came his most prestigious gig yet. He landed a job at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, as a senior medical monitor on the space program. Tom Davis and his team studied human physiology. As Auckland University professor Guglielmo Aglietti from the Auckland Space Institute explains.
So some of the studies, for example, that Papa Tom did in his early career, let's say, for example, see how people were responding to extreme environment, and in his case might have been, you know, surfing when it was the middle of the winter in the South Island, or even playing sports when it's, you know, sub-zero temperatures, the kind of how the human body responded to those temperatures, those were all things that could be used when you were thinking about designing something to allow people to survive in space.
In 1958, Tom Davis and several researchers met with aerospace engineer Dr. Werner von Braun. They were tasked with writing a program to send a man to the moon. The article Tom Davis wrote centered on capsule temperature during space flight. This document would be vital to the Apollo space program in 1961.
Clearly, before you put, you know, a man in space or you know, in aircraft and so on, you tend to do experiments, you know, with animals that, although now might be sometimes, you know, frowned upon, and clearly we don't want to hurt animals and so on. But the research that was initially done, the experiments, for example, in flying dogs, monkeys, and so on, were quite important because to see if an animal was able to survive, for example, in space, clearly gave us a lot of clues, a lot of understanding to then try to improve the system and make it safe enough so that a person could survive in space.
Tom was at the peak of his career, but personally, he was about to face a significant blow. In 1967, after 27 years of marriage, Lydia Davis and Tom Davis divorced. From the time of their divorce, Tom lived in his 37-foot lobster boat at the marina in Winthrop, Washington, D.C. Then a year after the divorce, Tom Davis started getting some strange messages in the mail from Rarotonga. In his book Island Boy, he wrote,
I received audio cassettes of the voices of my relatives and friends back home saying that the political scene there was not good. Typically, there were no details, only some weeping and pleas to come home and do something about it.
This might have seemed a bit odd, and maybe a taped message was more heartfelt than a letter. Tom Davis had a feeling he'd be returning home, and this was the slight push he needed. While he lived in the USA, the Cook Islands was going through its own wind of change. In 1962, the then Minister of Island Territories in New Zealand supported the 1960 UN General Assembly resolution that required colonial powers to grant independence to indigenous people. This was good news for the Legislative Assembly of the Cook Islands, who chose to self-govern. In July 1965, the Assembly passed a motion that the Cook Islands could self-govern in free association with New Zealand. In August of 1965, Albert Henry was the first elected Premier. Tom Davis did know Albert Henry. In his autobiography, he describes them as good friends. They had met back in 1946, but was the friendship still there in 1971? Here's Tom Davis again, talking to Ian Johnston.
Can you remember the first time that you met Albert after you got back?
Oh, yes. Yes, we met. Of course, we'd always been good friends, despite the undercurrent of rivalry.
So, after almost 20 years in the United States of America, Tom Davis said goodbye to America and returned to the Cook Islands. If eradicating diseases in the Cook Islands, sailing halfway around the world to America, and sending monkeys into space wasn't impressive enough, Tom Davis was about to enter into more unknown territory. Politics. He joined the Cook Islands Democratic Party and began preparing for the 1972 elections in opposition to Albert Henry's Cook Islands Party. Historian Howard Henry has written 14 publications about the Cook Islands. He describes the political scene back in 1965.
People here were very political, very politically minded. Yeah, Albert came back in 64 and formed the Cook Islands Party and went into the 65 election, and the Cook Islands Party won it. The opposition at the time were basically independents and small parties who didn't know how to put a campaign together.
So the opposition party was not a match for Albert Henry's Cook Island Party, and in the next election, Albert Henry again proved popular with the people.
They went into the 68 election, the Cook Islands Party was solid behind Albert. That's when the opposition decided, all his opposition decided, if they ever want to get up and compete against Albert and Cook Islands Party, they've got to come up with a leader who can compete with him.
So in 1971, Davis was persuaded to come home and help found the Cook Islands Democratic Party. But there was one thing that didn't go down well at the dinner table in the Davis household: politics. It would divide Tom Davis and his family, as his sister Temahiru recalled.
The premier was a close friend of my father's. So my father was staunch foundation member of the Cook Islands Party. So when I came back, I thought, well, there's my father and there's my brother, my mother's only son. Who do I support?
Just to clarify, Tom Davis and Te Pairuita had the same mother, but different fathers.
It was very hard. But I thought, right, everybody seemed to be supporting Albert Henry, most of the people. So I supported Tom.
The Cook Islands Democratic Party geared up for the next election.
And so they went into the 72 election. There was 9 seats on Rarotonga, or 8 seats on Rarotonga out of the 22. The consensus was whoever won Rarotonga would win the election. The outer island seats was pretty much even between the two parties. But so the whole test of who's going to win centred on Rarotonga. So Rarotonga became the heart of it. So it was very competitive. And so the 72 election, yeah, Papa Tom got his seat.
The Democratic Party got 48% of the votes in the 1972 elections. Out of the two main parties, they gained a seat but lost the election. But there was another blow. Over the next 2 years, from March 1972 to September of 74, just over 4,000 people moved away from the Cook Islands to New Zealand. Tom Davis and Albert Henry had been keeping a close watch on these numbers. It's not clear why, possibly to get in front of the wave of migration. But Albert Henry called a snap election for the 3rd of December in 1974. And this is where the political tug of war began between the Cook Islands Party and the Cook Islands Democratic Party. Under electoral law, those Cook Islanders who'd left for New Zealand could still vote. The catch, though, was that postal voting was forbidden. So the only way those islanders in New Zealand could cast their vote was to fly home.
You could leave the Cook Islands and be absent for 3 years and still be on the roll. But in order to vote, you had to come back to the Cook Islands to vote.
So cue the flying voters. The Democratic Party chartered a plane to fly Cook Islanders who had paid in advance from New Zealand to the Cook Islands to vote. According to Tom Davis, who wrote in his 1992 book Island Boy, these flights were available to everyone, no matter what party affiliation. Voting booths were set up at the airport, but it wasn't enough for Tom Davis and the Democratic Party. In 1974, Albert Henry's Cook Islands Party won 14 seats and Tom Davis's Democratic Party won 8. 4 years later, the political climate hit a fever pitch.
Then going into the 78 election, Papa Tom and the Democratic Party announced that they're going to fly in voters again. And this is when Papa Albert and the Cook Islands Party said they're going to fly in, we'll fly them in and we'll show them how to do it. 30 March 1978 was the election day and the Cook Islands Party won it.
Albert Henry's Cook Islands Party won, but Tom Davis's Democratic Party launched a petition and accused Henry's party of bribery and of spending the public purse to get the 400-plus extra votes they got through overseas voting.
Corruption. And the electoral court upheld it. And so what the electoral court did was discarded all those CIP 440-something votes that had voted on the Rarotonga constituencies for that, off that plane. And what that meant was 8 CIP candidates lost their seats. Democrats took over.
So just to explain again, Judge Gavin Don overturned the election result, which meant 8 candidates from Albert Henry's Cook Islands Party lost their seats. That decision meant that Tom Davis's Cook Islands Democratic Party won the majority vote and was now the ruling government. So Albert Henry was no longer the premier. He was charged and pleaded guilty to crimes under the Electoral Act. But in 2023, Albert Henry, who was known as Papa Premier because of his work in the formative years of the Cook Islands, was given a formal pardon by Sir Tom Masters, a representative of King Charles III. So, in 1978, Tom Davis was the new premier, and the Democratic Party wasted no time in making a few changes. Here's historian Howard Henry again.
One of the first that they did was to change the Cook Islands flag. The other positive thing that he did was a number of constitutional changes through the Legislative Assembly. And the first thing he did was to change the Premier of the Cook Islands to Prime Minister of the Cook Islands. The second change in it was to change the Cook Islands Legislative Assembly to Parliament of the Cook Islands.
Davis's time in leading that parliament, however, didn't always go smoothly. He lost a close election in March 1983, only to get back into power that November when a new election was forced by the death of one MP and the defection of another. He was the dominant figure in Cook Islands politics through the 80s, but dominant didn't always mean popular.
Papa Tom was one of those guys that it was his way or the other way, his way the only way. He was always right. It had to be his way. He was that type of personality. Whereas for a lot of the cabinet ministers, they didn't really like that. So, but they couldn't compete with him. They couldn't argue with him. So what a lot of the cabinet ministers and senior others, they just basically kept away from him. You know, and have as little to do with him as possible because he was known to be quite erratic and he could be quite aggressive.
Tom Davis wrote in his autobiography that his leadership in the Democratic Party often felt strained. He felt he was out of touch. He struggled with public debates and oratory in the native language, Cook Island Māori, unlike Albert Henry, who was considered an expert orator. Tom's leadership was under threat.
They wanted to get rid of him, but they didn't want to get rid of the government. They still wanted, how are they going to do it? And the crunch came July 87 with the budget. The budget was put up into Parliament, and a couple of the Democratic Party caucus members voted against it. They voted with the opposition, so the budget was not passed. 3 times attempts were made to pass the budget. 3 times it failed. Simply because a couple of the Democratic Party members did not want to support it. They voted with the opposition, so it wasn't passed. The caucus members didn't want Papa Tom as Prime Minister, but they didn't want to give up the government. What option they got? And they came up with the answer. And one of them stood up and moved the motion of no confidence in Papa Tom Davis as Prime Minister. The vote was taken and it was carried. He was out. 29th July 1987. He was out, just like that. Bang.
Tom Davis spent 8 years as the Cook Islands Prime Minister. He supported economic growth and business. He was at the forefront of the tourism boom that put the Cook Islands on the map as a popular holiday destination. In 1994, he lost his seat and resigned from the Democratic Party. But his adventures weren't over yet. Sailing was a constant feature in Tom Davis's life. In the early 1990s, he was at the forefront of reviving traditional Polynesian ocean navigation. He founded the Cook Islands Voyaging Trust, set up to revitalise Waka building and Waka ocean voyaging. The Cook Islands government commissioned Tom Davis to build two Waka or outrigger canoes, Takitumu and Te Ao o Tonga. In 1995, Henare Te Ua was in Rarotonga with Sir Tom Davis at the 1995 Pacific Arts Festival.
Now, this is the Waka which quite recently sailed from here, or set out from here to go right through to Hawaii, isn't it?
Yes, yes. I'm very pleased with the design. The ancestors were several thousand years developing these canoes, and if I've read it right, it should be right. Yeah. And if I read them right, and read the literature and the oral tradition right, this is the Te Pairua type. That is an alia over there, which is the Takitumu. And she's the alia type. This is a Te Pairua type. No, it's double canoe type of this region.
At 74 years old, Tom sailed Te Ao Tonga across the Pacific. Pea Patai was lucky enough to be part of the experience.
He's a self-taught traditional navigator. But we sailed very well. He's a difficult man to sail with. But I admire him as my tupuna. That's really, like what I said, that his genius is actually building, in the building of the canoes. He's the one that actually put that into real. And now all our other canoes that have been built now are all based on that design that Papa Tom put into life.
And Tom Davis went on to build several waka in various sizes. Pea Patai says Papa Tom had a hectic life on land, but out in the ocean, it was different.
Sailing on a canoe, you know the heart of a person. So the ones that that sails really know him, even though we have that limited time, a couple of months that we were on the ocean. But I think we know more than the ones that has been on land. They have that land effect on them.
Our people, this is at least 5,000 years of our people developing a maritime nation. They knew how to make a canoe so that its shape slipped through the water easily. And they were masters.
Sir Tom Davis, Pa Tuterangi Ariki, died in 2007 at his home in Ngatangia, Rarotonga. He was 90 years old. There was a funeral service at the Rarotonga Hospital. He was taken to his home, where he lay in state for 2 days, and then taken to the church auditorium, where hundreds of mourners attended. From the Cook Islands and beyond, Sir Tom Davis was a change maker in every facet of his life. A man with flaws, nevertheless a trailblazer for Indigenous doctors, scientists, voyagers, and politicians around the world. But for his sister, Te Pairuwita, he was her older brother, who never stopped learning.
His mind is always up there somewhere, thinking about things beyond our understanding. He was quite sure he could build a blinking air thing to go up in the air. Yeah, he had great ideas of what can be done.
You're listening to Untold Pacific History Season 2, and I'm your host, Kuroi Hawkins. This episode was produced by Justine Murray and was made with the support of New Zealand On Air. Thanks to Tiki Lounge Productions, who interviewed all the people you've heard in this episode. Special thanks to Ngatanga Korero Sound and Vision for supplying the archive recordings of Tom Davis with Ian Johnston and Henare Te Ua. Executive producer is Tim Watkin. Thanks to Steve Burridge, our sound engineer, for this episode. You can watch the Untold Pacific History series on YouTube or the RNZ podcast and series page at rnz.co.nz. You can find this and other episodes in this series on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, please subscribe and give us a rating so that others can find it. Ai re ra.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.